teeth. He transitioned the M4 to his primary hand and moved back into the hallway. Two more doors on this floor, 11 more men and 5 more females to contend with, if the intel was correct. Next door, locked. Fuck. Reese reached for his lockpicking set, no sense in kicking in a door and alerting a numerically superior force to his presence. Clicking on a small green LED light on the side of his helmet attached to a flexible neck allowed Reese to direct it appropriately. He slightly tilted his helmet up to allow him to see under his NODs to work the lock. As he inserted the first pick, the door began to move. Reese's right hand moved back to his M4, bringing it up while at the same time he identified his threat. Standing in front of him was a young woman wearing only panties, and behind her, sitting awake on the bed, was a fighting-age male, clearly just getting out of bed and unsure of what was happening. Reese's left hand clamped around the throat of the girl in front of him as he made entry into the room. Sensing commotion at the door, her male companion stood up to make sense of what was happening, only to catch 2 rounds in the stomach from Reese's M4, fired from a position of retention. Reese drove the young woman into the floor, firing 3 more rounds into the target before him. Letting out a loud grunt, the barely awake man absorbed the next 3 rounds in the upper chest and neck, grabbing helplessly at his throat as blood sprayed from the deadly wound, sinking to the floor in a gurgle of death throes. Reese quickly scanned the rest of the room to ensure it was clear, and then yanked the young prostitute to her feet by the throat and onto the bed.
"Por favor, no,"
she managed to cough out.
"Por favor, no."
Reese had no reservations about sending her to the afterlife, but wouldn't do so unless it were absolutely necessary. Pulling her up again by the throat, he moved her across the room back to the doorway, pinning her against the wall so he could look out into the hallway with his NODs. Still quiet. Frogman luck, Reese thought.
"Por favor, no,"
she whispered again, her eyes wide with fright.
"Silencio,"
Reese hissed, pushing her down to her knees and then forcing her to prone out on the floor. With an efficiency based on years of practice and execution, Reese pulled plastic zip ties from his plate carrier, quickly binding the young woman's hands and feet. Looking around the room, Reese settled on a sock near the dead man's shoes and stuffed it into her mouth, securing it with another zip tie. He then ushered her to her feet and back onto the bed, using a third tie to secure her to the metal bed frame.
"Silencio,"
he ordered again in a hushed tone. Her terrified eyes acknowledged understanding. Reese moved back to the side of the door and ejected his partially used magazine, replacing it with a fresh one. Stowing the other away in case he needed it later, he examined the hallway yet again. Still quiet. If he had had his troop with him, the building would have been secure by now. As this was a solo mission, Reese still had a ways to go. Last door of the top floor, unlocked. Reese pushed it open. His first thought was, how in the hell could these people not have heard the commotion next door? His next was, how in the hell could I not have heard them through the wall? 2 naked and heavily tattooed gang members were pounding away at one of the prostitutes. She was on her hands and knees, taking one man from behind while taking the other in her mouth. Even with a small candle burning on the ground in the corner, none of them noticed the door inch open or the muzzle of Reese's rifle rise to chest height and fire 2 rounds into the upper back of the man working away at her from behind. If the other man noticed the reason for his friend's demise, he didn't show it. As the first dead man fell forward and collapsed onto the back of the woman in front of him, his partner in crime looked down in amazement to see his chest suddenly erupt into an unnatural, violent mess of blood and tissue. His mind was just starting to realize what had happened when Reese's next round found its way through his left eye socket, tearing through the rational thinking hemisphere of his brain and sending him down in the most unnatural of positions against the blood-stained headboard. Reese moved his IR laser back to the first man and put a security round in his head before swiftly committing to the room and kicking the first man off the female. She stayed face down, not moving. For a second, Reese thought he had accidentally shot her, but then he realized the blood and tissue that covered her body were not her own. She was merely in shock from the 2 men she was just having sex with suddenly die on top of her, showering her in a bloody mist. Rhys let her live, zip-tied her to the bed, performed another tactical reload, retaining the semi-used magazine, and moved back into the hallway. Clear. Six down. Three prostitutes of the six total alive on the top floor. Eight more hostiles and three more non-combatants to contend with. Move. Rhys had become an instrument of death. Nothing felt more natural to him than moving through a target. He had done it at all tactical levels on the battlefield, and now he was progressing through a new target, one that had no idea what was coming. Down into the stairwell, scanning, clearing, processing every detail, weapon up and ready. As Rhys slowly pushed open the door to the second floor, he first sensed and then saw movement, meeting a juiced-up gangbanger in boxers running down the hallway with a stainless steel revolver in his hand. He must have heard or sensed something amiss upstairs. The sixth sense at work. He caught 5.56 bullets in the chest as Rhys shot him down. Killing men in close quarters was not as easy as the movies or local defensive weapons courses would have one believe. Sometimes men die hard. There was no magic formula in the real world that would guarantee that someone would go down and stay down. The two to the body, one to the head, popularized as the Mozambique technique, was quickly dispelled in the realities of modern combat. Rhys and his men shot their targets down. Whether it took one shot or 10, you shot them into the ground. A light switch was thrown at the end of the hall, and it erupted in a cheap, flickering glow. Rhys saw the man at the end of the hall who had taken away the advantage of night vision, wearing jeans and a t-shirt, tattoos up the side of his neck and bald skull. Rhys's shot down the hallway missed his mark as he pushed his helmet back on his head to see under the NODs in the new, lighted environment. The t-shirted man scrambled for his open door. Wanting to get to him before he could get to a weapon, Rhys charged down the hallway, firing the M4 into the open door of the t-shirted man's room, clearing it by taking the angle and firing as he went. Not the usual protocol, but without a team of highly trained assaulters behind him, he needed to improvise. As Rhys attempted to get a better angle on the door, a heavily tattooed arm shot out of the room, grabbing his barrel and pinning him to the end of the hallway wall. Jeez, this guy is strong! With the M4 pushed against Rhys's chest, it was combat ineffective. Rhys grabbed the shaved, tattooed head in front of him, smashing his helmet and NODs into the man's face twice before pushing both of them off the wall and back into the open door to the room. Rhys registered a female voice screaming and saw a naked woman out of the corner of his eye, grasping desperately at sheets as she watched the death match taking place in front of her. Rhys's kick off the wall propelled them both into the small bedside table, sending them crashing to the floor. His opponent was heavily muscled and outweighed Rhys by a good 20 pounds. Landing on top of Rhys, he wound up to deliver a crushing blow to the commando's face. Rhys brought his head forward as the punch came down, connecting the man's fist to Rhys's helmet. It's strange, the things one notices in combat. Through the screams of the naked prostitute, the flickering of the lights, and the crushing weight of the gangbanger on top of him, Rhys saw the bandage. It was not professionally done, but Rhys knew instantly what it was. The bandage of a gunshot wound. This was the man Lauren had wounded protecting their daughter. A rage like he had never known boiled up inside him. Locking the bigger man's right arm to his body and trapping his right leg with Rhys's left leg, Rhys executed a jiu-jitsu move called the umaplata, sending his enemy over and onto the ground. In one fluid movement practiced many times in training, Rhys pulled a sharp dagger from its position on his plate carrier and sank it into the throat of his wife's killer. The eyes in his shaved head opened wide as he continued to struggle. Rhys pushed down harder, withdrew the blade, and reinserted it with a sawing motion across his opponent's throat until his squirming stopped and he lay dead in a growing pool of blood. Rhys had no time for reflection. Bullets cascaded into the room from directly across the hall. AK fire. Rhys knew the sound well. The rounds were being sprayed into the room without any real discipline, racking across the back wall and cutting across the upper body of the screaming prostitute. silencing her forever. Rhys grabbed a frag grenade from a pouch on his belt, pulled the pin, and sent it careening into the adjacent room. Luckily, the construction was cinder block and could take a solid hit. When the grenade exploded, it sent debris flying into the hallway and into the room Rhys now occupied. Taking advantage of the confusion from the blast, Rhys flew across the hallway. There was no need for security rounds. One gangbanger and one woman lay dead, their bodies mangled from the violent blast, contorted into unearthly positions that signified death. 9 targeted individuals down, 3 females upstairs alive, 2 females dead on second floor. Now on the opposite side of the hallway from the stairwell, Rhys reached out and killed the lights that still flickered after the grenade blast. Adjusting his NODs, he did another tactical reload and scanned the hallway from a position of cover inside the room that the grenade had rendered clear. One door was still closed on this floor. Rhys cleared the room that the man with the handgun appeared to have come from. A larger woman in a dirty shirt was crouched in the corner, knees tight to her chest. Her eyes were closed and she appeared to be praying. Rhys let her be and moved to the closed door. Twisting the knob and throwing it open, he flattened himself against the hallway wall, half expecting a hail of bullets to burst through. Instead, there was nothing. Rhys slowly cleared around the door so he could see as much of the room as possible. Still nothing. He then made entry. Quickly sweeping the room and clearing all corners, he discovered it empty. One floor to go. Reaching the stairwell door, Rhys took a breath. Time to finish the job. Pushing the door open, Rhys cleared both up and down the stairway. He began to work his way down when the first floor came alive with the sounds of war. Rhys positioned himself so he had a clear view and line of fire to the first floor stairwell door. He could clearly discern AK fire and what sounded like M4s and shotgun blasts. He heard yelling and commotion in Spanish getting closer to the downstairs door. More shouting and more gunfire. Suddenly the door Rhys was covering flew open and in stumbled what were clearly 2 hostiles. They started to charge up the stairs when Rhys cut them to shreds, the door slowly closing behind them. Rhys refocused on the door, saw it begin to open, and began to apply pressure to his trigger.
"Rhys! Rhys, it's me!"
came Marco's voice up the stairs. Rhys checked up as he saw his friend cautiously inch his face into view.
"Okay, I see you, buddy," Rhys called out. "You clear down there?" "See, my friend," came the reply. "Coming down," Rhys shouted back.
Rhys descended the stairs, weapon at the ready, all senses heightened and alert. He stepped over the 2 bodies at the bottom of the stairs as Marco opened the door for him. In the hallway were Marco and 3 of his security detail. Strewn on the floor were 2 more dead gangbangers and 1 dead woman. One of Marco's detail had another man on his knees, head against the wall. Rhys turned to Marco.
"Well, that didn't work out as quietly as I thought. How long until the police get here?"
"No policía esta noche, amigo."
Marco sounded confident.
"The night is ours. We saved this one for you,"
he said while motioning toward the man on his knees.
"Do you want to ask him any questions?"
Rhys looked at Marco and back to the prisoner, his eyes cold as ice.
"No,"
Rhys said, as he walked toward their detainee, lowered his M4, and executed him on his knees.
"Let's go."
Marco looked at his security detail, shrugged, and headed for the door. Chapter 48. Bird Rock, California. The sun was coming up over the San Diego skyline when Rhys returned from his foray south of the border. He'd thanked Marco profusely for his generosity and loyalty and was told,
"It was nothing, amigo."
The events of the past weeks had caused Rhys to sit back and take stock of his friendships. What he'd learned about loyalty was surprising. Some friends had leaned in hard to help in his time of need, while others had backed away. Some would have thought that his fellow SEALs would have rallied around him, but with the exception of Ben Edwards, that hadn't been the case. Most of his closest friends in the teams had been killed in the ambush. Others were probably too scared of retribution from Pilsner. It was a disappointment, but still, Reese couldn't blame them. Old friends like Marco and Liz, as well as new friends like Katie, had been there for him in ways that he'd never forget. The truth was that most SEALs he knew just needed to stay focused on preparing for war. That was their job, and any distraction from it only hindered mission success. That was how it had to be. From the outside looking in, one would think what Reese had done just a few hours earlier would cause thoughts of introspection, regret, and possibly even confusion. Movies and books often portrayed soldiers having a difficult time taking a life in combat and then struggling to deal with the psychological after effects of their actions. To Reese, killing was one of the most natural things one could do. It was hardwired into his DNA. If he were to think about it, Reese would conclude that the only reason he was alive today was that, throughout history, people in his lineage had been good at fighting to defend the tribe and at providing sustenance for their families. Killing was not so much about taking a life, it was about sustaining life, the lives of your countrymen, your unit, your family, yourself. That Reese did it exceptionally well did not bother him. Killing was what he did better than anything else. He remembered being surprised by the feeling he experienced the first time he killed another man in combat. If one was to trust the experts, he should have felt instant remorse, regret, and confusion, even anger. It was as if society expected those who have taken lives in defense of their nation to immediately require counseling to assist them through their grief. Perhaps that convenient narrative allowed civilized society to better deal with their detachment from the realities of warfare, while sending young men to die in the mountains, jungles, deserts, and cities of foreign lands difficult to find on a map. The truth was less complex. The truth was primal. Reese felt no such remorse. The first time he killed, and every time thereafter, he had felt a different emotion. Relief. Relief might seem like an odd reaction, especially to the uninitiated. It was not relief in the sense that Reese discovered he could kill. He had never really worried about that. It was relief in the sense that his training, his skills, his instincts, his intellect, his dedication to understanding his enemy and the conflict in which they were engaged had not been found wanting. It was relief to be alive. Reese had a natural ability not just to fight, but also to lead. Those two attributes had drawn his men to his side and built a trust not found elsewhere in polite society. It was what Reese was born to do. He didn't do it because he liked it. He did it because it was required to ensure the survival of his men, his country, and his family. It wasn't that Reese felt no emotion from his years in combat. He was far from a sociopath. In combat units, sociopaths got good people killed and were weeded out as soon as possible. When the topic came up in preparation for war, Reese would share with his men a story of the most important shot he had taken in combat. He framed it as the most important shot he didn't take. In an exceptionally brutal firefight in the streets of Fallujah, with bullets flying past and enemy mortars coming in, Reese cleared a dusty street corner and brought his rifle up, putting a man dressed in the black garb of the enemy into the crosshairs of his ACOG. At that point, anyone in the streets of Fallujah was considered a viable target by the commander's interpretation of the rules of engagement. But something about this didn't look quite right. The man was on a bicycle, riding slowly away from the fight. Could he be attempting to flank or attack elements in the rear? Possibly, though something about the man's body language and the way he rode the bike suggested otherwise. Reese couldn't quite figure out what it was, but his gut instinct and his morality caused him to remove his finger from the trigger and watch the man until he rode out of sight. Reese had reached down, switched frequencies on his embitter, and transmitted a description of the man and his direction of travel to support elements in the rear. As he was about to sprint across the street to continue the push to retake the city, a mortar exploded on the opposite corner, forcing him back against the building and showering him with debris and dust. Had Reese not paused and watched the man in black ride away from the fight, or had Reese killed him and moved on, he would have been standing exactly where the mortar had landed. The man on the bicycle, moving away from the battle, had probably saved Reese's life. Combat was also about discretion, and he never regretted not taking that shot. Sometimes the most important shots in battle are the ones not taken. Reese understood that killing was necessary. It was his duty, it was his calling, and he wasn't about to stand back and let someone else go into the fray.